Welcome into the Sports Line here across ESPN Radio in Virginia. It's Ed Lane, no Rich Roth with us today, but we are jam-packed with even more great content. College sports galore. Erin McFarling, columnist, Roanoke.com, is going to stop by with us around 5:10. We'll check in about ECC Media Days, how he made out financially from the World Cup, and also get his outlook on what to expect with not just the All-Star game, but his guy, Manny Machado for the Baltimore Orioles, the subject of trade rumors, most people speculating that he's either going up I-95 to the Philadelphia Phillies or out west to the LA Dodgers. And quick side note, if you're interested in that, I, as a Phillies fan, am not ready to part with a ton of top prospects if we're not going to get a long-term deal for him, because, let's be honest, I don't think Philly is... I think they've overachieved at this point in the season. Atlanta, a little bit more stocked in their farm system as far as guys that have contributed immediately. And then there's Washington lurking in the balance trying to make one final run. I just don't see Philly as having the top-end talent to compete for a championship. And if that's the case, I don't like going all in with a bunch of prospects if you're not a serious contender to actually get over the top. That's just my outlook on trade deadlines in baseball. I think the LA Dodgers, clearly they're nearer to that point, having made it to the World Series and lost to Houston in Game 7 last year. So on that note, as a Phillies fan, I'm hoping if Machado's getting dealt that it's either to the LA Dodgers or it's to Philadelphia for a very moderate amount of prospects and not the highest end prospects, unless there's a long-term deal attached with it, which is unlikely because for the most part in baseball, all these guys tend to hit the open market. So we'll find out how that actually unfolds. ESPN Radio's national coverage of sports will keep you updated with even more of that as the next couple of days unfold. All-Star game last night, Bryce Harper wins the home run derby. Love the bat flip, by the way. It's something that ticks off a lot of the baseball purists. But I heard this earlier today, and it may have been the guy that was filling in for Stephen A. from 1 to 3 across ESPN Radio in Virginia. I believe that's who it was, who mentioned that Mike Trout's popularity as one of baseball's superstars is on par with, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it was one of the bench warmers in the NBA, a guy that's one of your rotational players that shifts around. And Mike Trout, clearly a top five caliber talent in Major League Baseball right now. Some would say, those that may follow the game a little closer than I do, might peg him as the best player in baseball, but he plays in the obscure, not just LA market, but really the Anaheim market, a team that doesn't have much history or direct ties to Los Angeles the way the Dodgers do, and a guy that baseball hasn't necessarily marketed individually. And I know they've ramped the efforts up. I heard the other day on Golic and Wingo when MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred was on that is one of their stated efforts and goals, is to try to start marketing some of these younger stars in baseball. But the generation or so of Bud Selig, where it's all about the team and none about the stars, while as a team sports guy, I still root for team first over stars, you still need to have some level of brand connectivity. And here comes my NFL bias in that regard. I think the NFL's got it right because, yes, the guys wear face masks, but most everyone can identify with the players they've chosen to market as the stars, whether it's quarterbacks, whether it's your wide receivers like an Odell Beckham Jr. or an Antonio Brown, a running back like an Ezekiel Elliott, or the guy that's gotten a ton of headlines recently, Le'Veon Bell. The NFL's marketed it well, but yet the team still has a lot of control to build things their way. In the NBA, it's so player-heavy and so player-powerful that it's virtually impossible to actually get team success sustained, as we've seen lately. Yeah, the Warriors have been able to do it, but nobody's been able to come close to challenging them and really putting together a formidable plan for that. Because if you're an organization, well, it's hard to do that. So the NBA, it's so about the individual that team relevancy and brand, unless you're one of the five, six, seven maybe, marquee franchises in the league, I don't know if there's really a point in being a fan of any of those teams. unless it's the Lakers, the Heat, the Warriors, the Houston Rockets, the Celtics. You can put the Knicks, maybe the Sixers in that category as well. The Bulls are in that department. But you can run things great and do things very well and build a great roster like the Orlando Magic did back in, what, 2009, 2010. And you have stars that just want to go to bigger markets and teams are helpless to do anything about it. And so it's all player focused. I think the NFL's got it right in that department because there is enough star power, but yet at the same time, the NFL certainly allows for teams to hold enough of the cards that everybody has a chance to actually build a championship caliber team. And that's a real cut in with the way the NFL's operated that, you know, while I wouldn't say all 32 teams have a chance to win a championship, if you're one of those teams and you have at least a developed quarterback, you believe you have a chance to maybe make the playoffs. And then once you make the playoffs, perhaps you can make a run at a championship. So there is that individual balance, and it's by and large led by that one important position, which is the quarterback spot. And, you know, it's funny to bring that up because there are two things that have been in the discussion lately as far as the NFL goes. One is Le'Veon Bell's contract status with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And just a quick note on that, because ESPN has beat that into the ground regularly. Marquee fantasy player, star in the league. Pittsburgh is a marquee franchise, so there are a lot of factors as to why they're covering it very heavily. But as it relates to the NFL, I don't blame Pittsburgh for doing this at all. If you look at recent history, and heck, look at the guy that retired, or was retired by the league, shall we say, last week, DeMarco Murray. Murray had, what, 6-7 years of an NFL career. Around year four, Dallas ran him into the ground. He bounces to Philly for a poor free agent deal. They get rid of him after a year, trade him off to Tennessee. Tennessee gets one of two productive years out of him. It was his first year. Last year, he started to cede the role to Derrick Henry, pounding, wear and tear on the body, generally broke down. And now the league has effectively retired DeMarco Murray, or at least they're not willing to pay him what he believes he happens to be worth. So if you're looking at that and you're looking at recent history of Super Bowl champions, by and large, I think it pays to go with a running back by committee approach. It's a smarter investment. It frees up resources to go after pass catchers, pass rushers, pass defenders. Certainly the quarterbacks are going to get their own market. But, I mean, here's an interesting bit of information from Warren Sharp of Sharp Football. And I got this from my buddy Tommy Lawler, who put this up on one of his websites at Lawler NFL, if you want to check him out on Twitter. But the interesting bit of information as it relates to just NFL running backs is if you look at the last chunk of Super Bowl champions, since Pittsburgh won it in 2005, the cap hit, the average amount of investment in those players, the star running back, the lead rushing attempter on those teams, was $2.1 million. Reading the names off, LeGarrette Blount each of the last 2 years, journeyman running back, Ronnie Hillman with Denver, Shane Vereen with New England, Seattle, Marshawn Lynch, okay, high paid, $8.5 million, big superstar there. Ray Rice, before the domestic violence fiasco, $5 million. Then after that, it was Ahmad Bradshaw at $2.75, and he was part of a multifaceted backfield with the Giants. Brandon Jackson with Green Bay, Pierre Thomas with the Saints, Willie Parker, the second time the Steelers won the championship and the first, and then in between those two titles for the Steelers, Brandon Jacobs with the Giants, and Joseph Addai with New England. Again, total cap hit, $12.12 million over that time frame, or $12.12 million for Le'Veon Bell last year, $12.12 million. $2.17 average cap hit for championship running backs. You don't need one to win a Super Bowl in the NFL. So just a quick side note as it relates to the league and what's been going on there with Pittsburgh. And as it relates to the NFL as well on their overall brand, they're doing pretty well too. CBS and other outlets have delved into the information that came out yesterday with the Green Bay Packers, profits being publicly released because they are a publicly owned company. Since the NFL dropped their charitable status, they all of a sudden don't have to disclose financial figures for anyone else. But the Packers got $255 million from the NFL, $255 million in revenue last year. they got an additional $199 in local income. So $454 is the amount of money that the Pittsburgh Steelers have captured, or the Green Bay Packers have captured, in income last year. So all the controversy surrounding the NFL, they're still making out like bandits in that particular association. And all the talk about the NBA, as much as there is, football is still a very, very profitable business at that level. So a couple of notes to get to here on the sports line, and it's now our pleasure to get to a weekly guest here on the show, a man who does now need an introduction because he's got his own walk-up music. It is Roanoke.com columnist Aaron McFarling, presented by Jersey Lilies.
Oh, yeah.
You ready to hit this interview out of the park?
Yeah. We're on our way down to Charlotte, Mr. Berman and I. We just got in the car. We're leaving Roanoke. So about 3 hours away from the glorious Queen City.
Well, first off, wishing you and Mark safety in your travels, Aaron. Second of all, Tech and UVA both have interesting topics to discuss as it relates to them coming up with the ACC football kickoff. We'll start with the Hokies. Josh Jackson being presented to the media, first time he'll have a chance to speak in lieu of his being cleared and deemed eligible for the upcoming football season. Surprised, given how tight-lipped Virginia Tech has been under the Justin Fuente era and really just in recent years with accessibility?
A little bit, but I think it makes sense, and I think it's a smart thing to do just to sort of get it all out of the way now rather than have that linger even longer. Just let him say whatever. I'm sure he's had plenty of time to be coached on what to say or what not to say and all those things. So you can kind of put it to rest after tomorrow and move on. I mean, he's pretty much in the media room every week, so they don't keep him off limits by any means. And they know he's going to be the spokesman for the offense going forward, so you might as well bring him out there. And I don't know who else you would bring from the offensive side of the ball that would make sense. So for all those reasons, I'm not stunned. But, yeah, they have been pretty tight-lipped on all their off-the-field things. So that is interesting in that sense.
If they go with a pre-release statement and try not to comment on it, is that going to create more of a storm than if they just give him basically a de facto script to memorize and kind of utter off every time he's asked about this?
Yeah, I think we're going to see the latter. I mean, he's a smart guy. I don't think they would need to go the other route. That would make it more awkward, I think. And I think trying to smooth out the awkwardness is part of the goal of this. Get it over with and move on. You know, I mean, I think they're probably pretty confident he can handle himself, but I'm sure they'll give him a few tips of what not to say. Don't go too far down X rabbit hole or Y rabbit hole. So yeah, I mean, I don't anticipate any kind of prepared statement or anything like that.
Roanoke.com columnist Aaron McFarling, presented by Jersey Lilies, making his weekly cameo here on the sports line. The other side of the ball is probably even as interesting as any that we've seen. With Mook Reynolds being dismissed, obviously Adonis Alexander and his eligibility left early for the supplemental draft, and then of course Stroman and Edmonds both drafted in the April NFL selection process. As you look at the Hokies heading into this, how many questions are they going to be fielding, particularly about the back four?
You were breaking up just a little bit there, but I'm assuming the question was about the defense.
Yes.
And how concerned they are about it. Yeah. I would imagine very concerned. It's certainly a lot of dominoes that have fallen, and as the reporting has come out since we talked last week, about the arrest and everything involving Mook, that makes it, clarifies the matter, but it also, makes more dingy. If it was an academic thing, I don't think it would be quite the same as a felony. So I mean, you've got a lot of issues there, and Puente will have to address those. I mean, those will be the bulk of the questions. I mean, I think the offense people feel pretty good about. You know, they have a lot of players who have been recruited fairly highly and are ready to you know, take a next step here on that side of the ball. But it's just, there's just so much unknown on defense. Bud Foster is going to have to earn his money this year. I mean, not that he hasn't in the past, but you know, he's afforded to be a genius. He's going to have to coach like one.
Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com, with us here, presented by Jersey Lilies, with locations on Route 460 in Roanoke, as well as Electric Road in Salem. If you want to apply for one of their manager openings, stop by either of their locations and apply and learn more info about that. Aaron, Virginia, they come into this ACC football kickoff on the heels of Bronco Mendenhall's comments. You think he'll double down, try to clarify? What are you expecting out of UVA's often blunt head coach?
Yeah, I think he'll do similar to what he did when he talked to David Teal shortly thereafter, and just sort of try to say, hey, here's what I was trying to say with that. Here's the context under which it was said, and you know, here's why I said it. I think there'll be a lot of follow-up questions leading off of that, and I think he'll answer every one of them. I mean, that's just kind of the way he is, and I anticipate that to be a fairly interesting session for sure. I mean, I've always found him pretty interesting, as you guys know, because we've talked about it here, but. When you've got something like this where he was sort of the center of a controversy of his own making, I guess some would argue that it's the media's making too, or some would argue the media's making exclusively. I wouldn't agree with that, but it's out there that that's sort of an opinion. But I think he knows that he kind of stepped in it a little bit there, so he's had a lot of time to prepare how he's going to handle the various questions regarding that, and it'll be interesting to see what he does.
On to other things, Aaron. We will have more from ACC kickoff, and you obviously will as well at Roanoke.com. Your Orioles, looks like they're going to get something for Manny Machado. He is a fan of the Baltimore team that has struggled mightily this year. Dodgers are considered the leaders. Some have pegged Philadelphia as that. Which team are you hoping he goes to, especially for the sake of what Baltimore could recoup?
Yeah, Mark and I were actually just talking about that right before I went on, because, yeah, it's finally happening, it looks like. And, I prefer the Dodgers because I think they have a deeper farm system. They've got some pitchers, that Walker Buehler guy, I think, if the Orioles could find a way to nab him. There's some other guys that are high in their system that could be ready to contribute soon if you could pry them away. And I think the Dodgers are in it to win it now. I mean, look at the Kershaw situation where he's nearing the end of his contract here, and so who knows if you're going to have him beyond this year. And they need to try and go all in to try to win this thing, and they were so close to doing it last year that I'm sure they figure if we can add Machado to the mix, we're right there. So I would like that to be the case as a guy who pulls for the Orioles, that they put up a king's ransom. I don't know that that's what's actually going to happen. I'm happy. There has been a lot of competition for him if you read what's been out there, but you know you're getting a couple of months of a rental as opposed to somebody who's got a friendly contract that can give you another 2 or 3 years. So that works against the Orioles.
Yes, and as a Phillies fan, that's why I hope they don't win the Manny Machado sweepstakes, because I don't think they're really that ready to win the championship, but that's my own note on that. All-Star Game, you going to try to catch most of that this evening?
Yeah, hopefully we'll get into town right about the time that thing starts. I enjoy the Major League All-Star Game. I try to watch it with the family every year, at least watch the introductions with everybody, and then I dismiss them. They can go to bed or whatever they need to do. But it's tradition to see who's in the game and all the fanfare, and I enjoy that. And I enjoy the game, too. I mean, the game is still good. I think it's still good as a baseball fan. It's typically fairly low scoring. You've got, great arms coming in one after another, challenging the best players in the game. And it's good theater for me. I do like the fact they got rid of the World Series stake. You know, that was kind of unnecessary. For me, that was never a driving force to watch the game. And I'm sure there's people out there that, you know, don't even know they got rid of it because they don't tune in for that reason. But, yeah, I'll be watching as soon as we get there, and I'll enjoy it, I'm sure.
Is there a financial investment in this game for you, Aaron?
There might be. There might be. I haven't. I think the AL is -130, so, you know, slight favorite, about 6-5. Typically do take the AL, and it's usually very small stakes, but I'm not sure that's what I'm going to do tonight. I might look at some of the exotics. You know, sometimes they have a player to have more total bases, you know, a little matchup, you know, Bryce Harper versus Manny Machado or something like that. That might be something worth looking at just for a little extra interest in the game.
And while we're on the subject of finances, with Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com columnist, who's on his way to the ACC kickoff down in Charlotte. World Cup, was it friendly to the McFarling Retirement College Vacation Fund, or did you guys take a bath with that?
Neither. I wouldn't say I took a bath on it, but I didn't crush it. I'm a draw better, so... And there weren't a ton of draws in the event, and that, I think that makes it made a good theater for the fan. You know, and a draw for betting purposes, any game that goes beyond the 90 minutes plus stoppage time, you know, if it goes into extra time for betting purposes, it's a draw. So there were a few of those, and I hit a few of those. You know, England had one and some others, but I was counting on one in the final, didn't get that, didn't get anything close to that 4-2 final. So. But typically you see them play kind of cautiously in those finals and just kick it around and take their chances at extra time and penalties if it comes to that. But it didn't. So, no, I didn't make a mint here for sure, but neither did I, just get totally shut out.
I'm just disappointed that you're a draw guy and that you root for what soccer needs to find a way to eliminate most, Aaron. That's a disheartening bit of information for me today, and it does hurt somewhere deep down inside.
Well, I gotta say, if you ever want to raise your appreciation of the game of soccer, that's the way to do it. That draws, because then you're rooting for nothing to happen. So then anytime anything does happen, you notice it. You're on high alert for those chances that come right in front of the goal. Then if somebody scores, well, then you're a fan of the other team. You know, you get to pull for potentially two teams in the same game over the course of 90 minutes. And it does. I mean, you realize that the game's not so much about how many goals are scored, but how many chances are created. And you become very acute, or you become very alert to those opportunities when they present themselves.
Interesting observation. Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com, with us here on the Sportsline. You and Mark have a fun trip down to and back from Charlotte, the ACC kickoff, and we'll be paying attention to see if you stir the pot at all or if you guys let Doug Dowdy do that.
Well, maybe we'll all do it. Who knows?
Yes, indeed.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And we'll be safe, and we'll check in with you next week.
Absolutely. Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com, presented by Jersey Lilies. If you're interested in being a manager and enhancing your economic opportunities, Jersey Lilies, 460 Orange Avenue in Roanoke and Electric Road in Salem. We're back next. Ian McCaw, Liberty Athletic Director, on their new bowl partnership. That when we return.